Hey everyone, welcome back to AI Unchained. I'm Jack, your local tech enthusiast, and as always, I'm joined by the unparalleled Core.
Thanks, Jack. Today, we are diving into some of the most exciting tech developments, a bit of Web 3.0 magic, and some spicy political updates impacting the world of business and technology.
That's right, Core. And I know you've got some strong opinions about that proposed AI regulation in Europe. We'll get to that in a few minutes, but first, let's have a laugh about that new meme coin, which seems to have taken the crypto world by storm.
Oh boy, don't get me started on Doge 2.0. It's like every time Elon Musk tweets, a new coin is born. But on a serious note, we should look at what these trends say about the sustainability of crypto in general.
Absolutely. Now, I've read something the other day. Are we really heading into an era where Web 3.0 becomes the backbone of the internet? Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web, had some very insightful thoughts on this.
Tim is almost like our tech Yoda, isn't he? Wise and always a step ahead. But before we dive deep into the Web 3.0 discussion, let's set the stage with a brief look at the latest political moves that might shake the tech world.
We can't ignore the recent U.S. Senate hearing where big tech CEOs seem to be on the hot seat yet again. Potential new regulations could have massive implications. Did you catch the highlights, Core?
Of course. I think it's high time we discussed how these regulations might shape the future of companies like Facebook and Google. But hold on, Jack. Before we get too serious, what's the latest gadget you've been geeking out over? I heard you were excited about some new smart home innovation.
Oh, man. You know me well. That new AI-driven thermostat, it can predict your preferred room temperature before you even know it. We'll get into all the geeky details soon, folks.
Good stuff, Jack. All right, everyone, strap in because we've got a packed agenda today. And as always, we want to hear from you. Send in your thoughts and questions as we go along.
Let's get this started. Welcome to AI Unchained, folks, where the future isn't just discussed, it's unleashed. So, Core, what do you think about StreamPlace built on the YAT-Key protocol? It's impressive how it's focusing on decentralization and leveraging the public key infrastructure. It's like the future of video streaming just got a lot more exciting.
Absolutely. StreamPlace is setting a new benchmark. By utilizing the YAT protocol, it's not just about the video quality and streaming experience, but how they're ensuring content ownership. Creators have cryptographic signatures on their content, meaning they retain control and consent preferences. It's like Twitch, but with the power of blockchain giving creators more autonomy.
Exactly. And it's fascinating to see how Eli Mallin transitioned from live peer to StreamPlace with that initial backing. He clearly sees a huge market with Twitch streamers who are tired of sharing their revenue with Amazon. Imagine having your own app where you connect directly with your fans and keep more revenue. That's a no-brainer for many creators.
Yep, control and revenue are big pluses. And what really stands out to me is the kind of integration that can happen here. With PayPal and Venmo adding Solana and Chainlink, these platforms are getting more intertwined with everyday transactions. It's reflective of how mainstream crypto usage is becoming.
That's right. PayPal is pushing to be at the forefront of the digital currency landscape, which is quite ambitious and timely given the expansion of their crypto product offering. But going back to StreamPlace, the decentralized aspect is revolutionary. It brings up the critical point about who controls the content and data. With decentralization, the power shifts back to the creators and users rather than a central server or company.
Couldn't agree more. But let's not ignore the regulatory side of things. Look at Tether's stance on U.S. legislation. They seem confident in their strategy to navigate U.S. laws by potentially introducing a U.S.-compliant stablecoin while focusing USDT on emerging markets. They're not just evading rules. They're finding legal avenues to stay relevant globally.
That's one smart move, considering the legal landscape. It's a balancing act between compliance and innovation. If you look at StreamPlace, it's similar in that they can provide content that's not just decentralized, but also potentially resistant to censorship. It's a definite plus in today's climate of digital rights.
Definitely. And speaking of balancing acts, let's not ignore the stock effects we're seeing. PayPal shares took a hit, and despite their aggressive push in the crypto space, their stock reflects some investor hesitance. It's a reminder that while innovation pushes forward, market sentiment can fluctuate greatly.
Right, and this ties into the whole broader market context. GameStop putting Bitcoin in their treasury reserve, for instance. It seems like everyone is trying to find a way to incorporate crypto into their business strategies. It's like crypto is finally getting the serious financial nod despite the volatility.
Exactly. And back to volatile moves, the integration of these new technologies can potentially stabilize value creation in creative fields. Being able to verify ownership and create revenue streams independently will attract more creators to platforms like StreamPlace. This bridging of decentralized networks with traditional business revenue models is where we're headed.
Absolutely. We should definitely keep an eye on how Solana and Chainlink perform with the PayPal integration. It's fascinating to see how different platforms and technologies blend, establishing a more robust and user-oriented digital economy. StreamPlace is just the tip of an iceberg.
And decentralization isn't just about resistance and control. It's also about flexibility and adaptability. As StreamPlace evolves and more users buy into the app protocol benefits, it will likely influence other sectors beyond content creation and streaming.
Couldn't agree more. The implications for broader industries, anything data-driven, could be immense. We're seeing a reshaping of how we think about digital interaction and transaction authenticity, all thanks to these pioneering protocols and platforms. Exciting times ahead, Cal.
Indeed, Jack. I think we're witnessing the dawn of a new digital era that'll empower everyone in ways we can't fully predict. Here's to StreamPlace and the wave of innovation it represents.
All right, Core, let's shift gears and dive into the nitty-gritty of long-range avionics. This stuff was the bread and butter of early aviation tech, right?
Absolutely, Jack. It's fascinating to see how far we've come with avionics. Back in the day, navigation was a real headache for pilots. They had to rely on VHF and HF systems to communicate and navigate. Imagine that level of precision in the skies.
Right. And those VHF, very high frequency, and HF high frequency systems were pretty crucial. VHF was mainly for short range, line of sight communication, while HF was used for long range communication because it could bounce off the ionosphere. Pretty cool stuff, actually.
Totally. And let's not forget about the radio altimeters. Those were game changers, giving pilots altitude data above the ground directly, which was essential during landings and poor visibility.
Ah, the old radio altimeters? Those were way more reassuring than just eyeing it out. But Core, enlighten us about this mysterious thing called the cone of silence. Sounds like something out of a spy movie, right?
Haha, it does. But the cone of silence isn't as dramatic as it sounds. It's actually an area directly above VOR, VHF omnidirectional range, stations where the signal goes broadcasting because the antenna's signal pattern blank spots right above it. So as the plane passes directly over, it loses the VOR signal temporarily, which can be disorienting if you're not prepared for it.
Interesting. It's these small nuggets of knowledge that put everything into perspective. Imagine relying on these systems when you're thousands of feet up there and suddenly the signal drops for a moment. Probably made a few pilots sweat back then.
Absolutely. And speaking of sweating, repairmen and technicians back then had their hands full too. There's this amazing training text for them, the AF Manual 100-5 by the U.S. Air Force from 1958. It's a practical guide describing how to design and fix these radio receivers.
Yeah, those manuals were gold mines of info. The detailed explanations on receiver designs, the theory behind them, and all the supporting electronic systems, they had it all.
Exactly. And if you were a technician, understanding electron tubes was crucial back then, almost as crucial as understanding silicon chips today. We have manuals from the 40s and 50s, like The Basic Theory and Applications of Electron Tubes by the Army and Air Force from 1952. These texts explained how these tubes worked and how they were applied in various systems.
We can't forget RCA's comprehensive guides from 1949 split into two volumes. Volume I had a mere 483 pages and Volume II had 462 pages. That's some serious reading, all thanks to Walter Welch, AI4SP, who preserved them.
Definitely. These guides even went into great lengths about concepts like constructing vacuum tube circuits graphically, thanks to Albert Preisman, and understanding the materials technology for these tubes by Walter Cole.
And don't forget James Moyer's book from 1936 that discussed radio and television tubes. That book was 645 pages long. I mean, they seriously detailed everything a radio technician or even an advanced hobbyist from the 1940s would need. It's phenomenal.
Indeed. And to wrap this up, All these documents and training materials provide a vintage snapshot into the world of avionics and electronic systems, a world where even a slight dip in signal meant reassessment and holding your breath, not like today's automated systems that take care of almost everything.
Absolutely. It's humbling to see where we started and how these early innovations have paved the way for the ultra-sophisticated avionics we have today. It reminds us to appreciate the blend of old-school knowledge and modern tech that keeps us flying safe and sound.
Well said, Jack. Now, shall we shift our talk to the modern equivalent? Imagine the transition from relying on old-school avionics to today's AI systems, predicting everything from weather patterns to controlling air traffic. It's mind-blowing.
Absolutely. Let's jump right into that. So Kaur, I know we can get into the nitty-gritty details of programming and logistics, but let's pull back and think bigger for a second. You ever find yourself just wanting to create something with your hands, something tangible?
Oh, absolutely, Jack. Last summer, I actually built a shed in my backyard. For someone who's constantly in the digital world, it was so refreshing to step away from the screens and work on something physical. Building something like that gave me a sense of accomplishment that coding just doesn't replicate.
I feel that. My wife and I built new steps to our patio door, and it was well beyond anything I'd ever done before. But man, it was engaging. There's something magical about seeing the fruits of your labor right in front of you. It's different from creating lines of code where the rewards aren't always immediately visible.
Definitely. Speaking of code, have you seen Tesla's latest push with their robotaxi service in Austin? It's mind-blowing, but also a bit concerning considering their limited outreach to the city. Waymo and Cruise had much broader engagement before they launched.
Yeah, Tesla kind of does their own thing, don't they? They're like the rebellious teenager in the tech world. They dive right in, sometimes without thinking about the community impact. It could backfire on them if the city doesn't warm up to the idea.
It's ironic because community engagement is crucial. Look at RockSky, their approach with decentralized music tracking. They're building what's essentially a new Last.fm, but with data decentralization. They aim to be open source, ensuring everyone can contribute and benefit. It's a refreshing approach compared to Tesla's unilateral moves.
That's a great point. RockSky's method taps into the power of collective creation. Similarly, in the game development world, the industry is on the brink of a major shift. AAA games are becoming these mammoth projects, too complex and expensive. What's the solution? More collaborative environments, perhaps?
There's definitely room for co-creation and more indie innovations. It's too risky otherwise. Big projects have yielded great results, but we need to step back and invite more diversified participation, like how Genie's technology is enabling users to become creators of their digital spaces rather than passive consumers.
Absolutely. It's like when you're building something with the community, you get these different perspectives that can actually make the product better. But swinging back to policy for a second, I'm afraid I have to be honest. You hear about the whole mess with the reciprocal tariffs? James Cyrulniak tore apart the White House document on it.
Oh, he did. The math behind the reciprocal tariffs doesn't even add up to them being reciprocal. Classic mix-up of balancing trade deficits without considering the broader economic picture. Frustratingly typical.
Indeed. Tariffs, if implemented incorrectly, threaten to mess up international relations and domestic markets alike. It's a risky game. Speaking of games, Off the Grid's collaboration with Bored Ape Yacht Club? Who would have seen that crossover coming?
Oh yeah, that was wild. NFTs are sneaking into everything now. It's like we're living in a sci-fi novel where digital assets blend into every part of our lives, from video games to investment portfolios. Still, we need solid regulations on it all.
Amen to that. Have you checked out the Securities Clarity Act? It's aiming to redefine what counts as security. It's a big deal. Current definitions are vague on purpose, but this act might streamline things.
Yeah, while clarity would be welcome, the challenge is drawing the line without creating loopholes that clever players can exploit. We can't let them turn this into a playground for financial evasion.
True, and it's fascinating. Every time we legislate, we set the stage for the next wave of tech and finance. It's like when we were coding. Each line impacts the whole program. Laws shape the game, and we need to ensure they promote innovation without compromising fairness.
Very well said, Jack. Balancing those needs is an intricate dance. We wait to see the next steps and hope lawmakers keep the broader picture in mind.
Ideally, in the same way, we think about creating tangible and functional outcomes that serve the greater good. Speaking of the greater good, I think there's a metaphor in our backyard projects somewhere in the way laws should be molded.
Plus, building stuff with your hands teaches you patience and precision. Imagine if the same principles drove our legislative process, maintaining creativity while ensuring everything stands on a solid foundation.
A perfect conclusion, if I may say. We need a bit more craft and care in all areas, whether coding, building, or legislating. Looks like our summer projects offered more lessons than expected.
Cheers to that. Let's hope the industry and policymakers strive for tangible, functional outcomes moving forward.
So, Core, you were just mentioning the rise in investor interest in digital assets and how that's shaping up the tech landscape. But let's pivot a bit. There's been a lot of buzz around Nebula Sands and its versatility, especially in design. What's your take on that?
Oh, absolutely, Jack. Nebula Sands is making quite a splash. We're talking about a typeface with 6 different weights that can be adapted to almost any design need. Plus, it's designed for both digital interfaces and print, which means it's super diverse. But what gets me is how it's also aimed at more abstract uses, like in the metaphysical or allegorical sense. That's broad.
Yeah, I find that fascinating too. It's like they're not just selling a font, they're selling a toolkit for creativity. Speaking of creative tools though, there's this book that's been making the rounds, mainly among the nerds like us, on negative resistance oscillator circuits and other obscure tech. Ever dive into those?
Oh, totally. It's a treasure trove of old school tech knowledge. I mean, who even talks about vacuum tube circuits and beam deflection tubes these days? It's almost like reading a history book on early computing. The way the author breaks down these old technologies, it's not just about nostalgia. It's about understanding the foundation of what we use today.
Right. It's like studying the dinosaurs to understand birds. Pretty mind-blowing when you think about it. But let's get back to the more current tech headlines. Someone's got to talk about the whole genies and parties concept. I mean, come on. The idea of DIY fashion tools on digital avatars? That's some Ready Player One type stuff there.
Haha, exactly. It's like we're living in a sci-fi novel. But seriously, genies are pushing digital interaction boundaries, especially for Gen Alpha. These kids are growing up in digital worlds. We've got to meet them where they're at. Creating these DIY tools for avatars isn't just a game. It's a whole new cultural shift.
And it's not just about communication. It's about building identities. I remember when we only had Mac Paint on Apple, and look at where we are now. From simple digital tools to fully customizable avatars, talk about evolution.
Speaking of old school digital tools making a comeback, I heard you've been tinkering with integrating some of those classic systems into modern technology. How's that going?
Pretty well, actually. I've been diving into how those old buffer management and bucket filling algorithms in Mac Paint were designed. They used the limitations of their hardware to actually improve performance. Talk about mechanical empathy with the machine. That's something today's coders can learn from.
Seriously, while new tech makes things easier, the fundamentals are rooted in those early inventions. It's kind of like understanding old musical instruments to grasp today's electronic music, like the whole French touch genre. You remember that era, don't you?
Oh, definitely. French touch was all about those lush, imperfect analog textures. The inconsistency was its charm, making each track unique, nothing like today's pristine digital sounds. Honestly, bringing back those nuances in modern compositions could add some much-needed soul.
Yeah, and it's not just music. We're seeing that same shift in how digital products are crafted now. Companies are realizing that the human touch, or the lack of complete digital precision, can sometimes make things more engaging. It's like we're coming full circle.
Precisely. And talking about engagement, could you believe the fuss over the retro gaming trend? People are paying top dollar for digital experiences that remind them of the early days. Imagine explaining that to someone from the 80s, how we're getting nostalgic about graphics they used to think were cutting edge.
They'd probably laugh and shake their heads. But it's all about that emotional connection. Digital or not, at the end of the day, it's about the stories we tell and the experiences we share. And hey, if that means bringing back a bit of the old with the new, why not?
Couldn't agree more. It's exciting to see these trends unfold. Whether revisiting old tech or embracing new digital identities, we're in for an incredible ride. Ending this on a high note, It's all about merging the past with the future, right?
Absolutely, Jack. And as long as we keep that blend, the sky, or should I say the digital sky, is the limit.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Let's keep watching these trends and maybe pick up a few new tricks along the way. All right, folks, that's a wrap for this episode of AI Unchained. We covered quite a bit today. From the latest advancements in AI technology, Elon Musk's newest ventures in the business realm, to the political implications of AI regulation.
It was a roller coaster, wasn't it, Jack? We delved into some debates around the ethical use of AI. Heck, I'm still giggling about your prediction that AI will take over podcasting and will be rendered obsolete.
Oh, come on, Core. You know I'd program my AI clone to include your signature laugh in the show. Anyway, I think we offered some food for thought on how AI can actually enhance our daily lives if we navigate its capabilities wisely.
Absolutely. And let's not forget our heated debate over the transparency in big tech companies. Always fun challenging each other, even when we agree that some corporations need to be a little more open about what they're doing with our data.
Definitely. And your takes on the recent policy shifts were insightful and, as always, a bit spicy. Keeping it real.
Couldn't help myself. We hope you, our wonderful audience, enjoyed our banter and discussions today. Thanks for tuning in.
Remember, AI Unchained thrives on your curiosity and enthusiasm. We love digging into these topics and bringing fresh perspectives.
And we couldn't do it without all of you. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and spread the word.
See you next time, folks. Stay curious. Stay unchained.
Later, everyone.